Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Oh boy, I'd better.
Here's John Williams.
We have some big ones today. We've got Kim Fox, the Cook County State's Attorney, will join us in a half an hour on social media on WGN. WGN King John, that's me on social media, and I there said if you want to ask a question, what would it be? On Facebook, Twitter, you can find it, WGN King John. And we plan on talking to Kim Fox at 1:35. We've got White Sox baseball about an hour from then. Pre-game coverage at 2:40. We'll continue on the stream, so I hope you're here at 2:40. We've got a fascinating show planned. At 2:40, you'll hear White Sox baseball. If you want to continue to hear me be fascinating, I'll be on the stream until 3. Rokon will start bright and early. That is at 3 o'clock with Anna DeVlantis. So the shows you come to know and love on WGN never go away. You just have to find them, and it's not hard. WGNradio.com. However you access the stream, we call it, that's where we will be today. Good to be on both right now. In our studio, meanwhile, is Marianne Haley, recently returned from the search of the Northern Lights on the Viking Sky, that cruise ship that was above the Arctic Circle around Norway. You may have seen the video and pictures of that ship listing in what were at times 100-mile-an-hour winds. And the problem was that the engines weren't working. And so now the ship is going back and forth. It's being pummeled by wind and waves. And the rescuing people, senior citizens, some of them, on helicopter ropes that they're hoisting them off the ship. At least that's what it looked like on TV. Marianne, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. Thank you, John.
You look good. Are you well?
I'm well. I'm happy to be here talking to you.
You are from Park Ridge.
Park Ridge, yes.
You and your husband were on that ship.
Yes.
First time you've been on a cruise?
This was our first ocean cruise, and my husband said it's our last ocean cruise.
You're physically and emotionally okay?
Still a little shaken.
I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you didn't get banged up the way some people did.
No, some people were quite injured and those were the people who were taken off the ship first in the helicopters.
About 900 passengers, about 400 crew. So about 1,300 people on that ship.
Correct.
As cruise ships go, then, that's a medium to medium-small size cruise ship, but that's still a big boat.
Yes.
How far into the cruise, you were on with us briefly yesterday, how far into the cruise were you all when this storm hit?
We were about 10 days into the cruise. We had left Bergen, Norway on the 14th of March, and we had sailed up to Narvik, Norway, Alta, Norway, above the Arctic Circle, and we were on our way back. So we had stopped at Tromsø, Norway, and we were supposed to stop in Bodø, Norway, but the seas around the port were too rough. So the captain decided to sail to our next stop, Stavanger, Norway, before heading across the North Sea to London.
So they told you, so the seas are going to be a little rough. We can't tender maybe from the ship to shore. We're going to skip that stop. That happens sometimes. We'll go on to the next one. Sometimes, though, they'll give you the weather forecast and what the sea is going to be like. Did they say it's going to be high winds and choppy waves?
At breakfast, one of the cruise directors said it was very choppy at breakfast, and he said, we think it's going to be a little worse by the afternoon. And
that's how much warning you had.
Yes. We couldn't imagine how much worse it was going to get.
Well, was it like a storm would be here in Chicago, dark clouds, wind, thunder, lightning, or was it just high seas, that
no,
sort of thing?
No, the skies were gray, but the seas just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
So then what happens?
My husband and I were in the atrium, which is about the middle of the ship, and we were on the second floor.
Is this during the daylight hours or evening
hours?
Yes,
this is about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
There are 7 full decks on the Viking Sky, and we were on the second floor because we thought it would be a little more steady, a little lower down in the ship. And we sat there, and then all of a sudden, the boat was heaving quite strongly, and then all of a sudden we heard dishes in the restaurant crashing to the floor, the bar, all the bottles crashed across the floor. People in chairs were being heaved across the room.
And we've seen video of that, like on one of the what looks like lounge areas, and suddenly the furniture is just slamming back and forth, and people are sometimes going with it. And that looked frightening. That must have been when the engines were not operating and the ship did not have much control.
Right. There was no...
So that happened rather suddenly then.
Mm-hmm.
So while the seas were high and you all are swaying back and forth and nobody's enjoying that, it wasn't dangerous yet. It was just really unpleasant, correct?
Correct.
And then that moment where the ship loses that kind of control was rather instant, huh?
Exactly.
Because on the video, I saw people and I thought, well, now how... It was weird to see people sitting there with cell phones in lounges with coffee cups in their hand. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, well, how bad could this be if these people are that casual about the scene? Mm-hmm. But it was because it came up so suddenly.
Exactly. Once there's four engines, and at this point, only one was working to keep the ship stabilized.
Did you know that at the time?
No, we did not. Just as well.
So then all of a sudden, I'll say all hell breaks loose.
Yes.
Was it rather violent then after that?
Yes, they sounded the seven bells and told us to go to our muster station. Ours was at the front of the ship in the bow, in the theater.
Those are the sort of areas you go in case of an emergency. It's a drill. You're supposed to get your life preserver. Did mm-hmm. you do that?
Yes, we did. And the crew started handing out life jackets. And then they ran out, and then the crew had to go outside of the ship to the lifeboats and get additional life preservers for us.
I wonder why. Is it because you all didn't have time to rendezvous back to your rooms and get life preservers?
There are no life jackets in the rooms on the ship.
Okay, well, I'm just confused as to how they would not have enough in the muster stations then. You're throwing your hands up in the air like me, too. Okay, so then you go to your muster station.
Correct.
Was that kind of a... And that's like very quickly. You're sitting there going, all right, this sucks, to, oh, my God, it's an emergency. Mm-hmm. And you rush to the muster station. Were you able to get there okay?
Well... It was very difficult. The furniture was being pushed across the floor as we were walking down the aisle. And a lot of the people were having great difficulty walking. And in some places, there were no handrails. So you had your hands along the walls trying to hold on to something to steady yourself.
And that's if you're in one of the passageways, one of the corridors. If you were in a more open area, I presume would have been much more treacherous.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did you see people? I don't want to belabor this point, but did you see people getting injured? I mean, we understand there were injuries.
Yes, yes, we did. We saw people thrown across the floor and thrown out of chairs onto the floor. And as you said, most of these passengers are senior citizens, some who were a bit infirm. And
what was the attitude like when you all then got to the muster station? Were people calm, or
yes,
was it kind of a panic?
Yes, throughout the whole thing. We were there over 24 hours. And people stayed calm the whole time.
Was it rough the whole 24 hours that you were in that one area?
It was extremely rough.
Did you worry that the ship was going to tip over?
Yes. Yes, we did.
I've always wondered that, because I cruise, and sometimes we have choppy seas. Nothing like what you went through, right? And actually, the cruising I've done has almost always been with pleasant seas, as was perhaps the case for the first 10 days of your trip. But you wonder, gosh, could the thing tip over? That was kind of scary. And I'm sure the answer is they can't.
We did not realize how close we were to the rocks, which would have been a extremely serious problem.
That was a problem I heard. Forget about tipping over. The ship doesn't have control. If it blows into the shore and hits the rocks, then water could come in, right?
Exactly. And water did come in to the back of the ship.
How was water getting in?
The wind blew the doors open. The wind and the rough seas blew the doors open in the back of the back muster station. And people were thrown underwater between 4 to 6 feet of water.
There were 4 to 6 feet of water on some of the decks?
Yes. And as the seas rushed in, and then they got all the people out of that muster station, which was one of the restaurants, and the captain sent out an order to close all the doors to keep the sea out.
Seal off the area.
Exactly, exactly.
So there you are in this tight area. How was the crew handling it?
The crew was fantastic. They're mostly young people from all over the world. They were calm. They were they took care of it. They helped all the people who were having difficulty walking.
How did you manage 24 hours? Was there any food provided? Were you able to go to the bathroom?
The bathrooms on that floor stopped working. So after a few hours, they would let people one by one with a crew member go up to the next floor where there were cabins and use whatever cabin they opened up.
So you're there for 24 hours. What happens after a full day?
After about 24 hours, the captain came on and said that the tugs that he had ordered finally got there. They were having difficulty. They had to wait till daylight. And when daylight occurred, they were able to get the tugs hooked up. By that time, they had three engines going again. And he said, we're going to sail farther out into the water.
I don't want to do that.
we weren't sure about that. But he said, we're going to sail farther out. And the seas were getting a little bit calmer. And he got the tugs hooked up. And he had three engines working. And he said, we're going to sail into this Molde, Norway, which is a beautiful little town. And under ordinary circumstances, it would be lovely to see.
Yeah, right. When and where did they pull people off with the helicopters?
They stopped pulling people off when they got the three engines working. When daylight hit, they got the tugs connected. They said, we're going to stop the helicopter evacuation now.
Really? But yes. I mean, if the ship was now operable with three engines, they still felt it was important enough to hoist people off?
Yeah, they were still doing a few evacuations that way. And then once it got a little more stable, they stopped. And for the last 4 or 5 hours, they did no more helicopter evacuations.
What was it like when you got to shore?
There were people standing on the docks. There were all kinds of emergency personnel. The people were cheering. The Norwegian people, they were just lovely. And the people who had gotten evacuated had been taken to two towns, Kristiansund and Molde. And those people were taken, it was Sunday, they were taken to a mall. They opened up the mall for the people to go in and buy necessities. People of the town of Kristiansund went door to door to collect clothes for them because they were all wet from the sea. And in Molde, the same thing happened. And the Norwegian people were just incredibly wonderful to us.
It's 120 on WGN. Isn't Marianne Haley doing a nice job? I know this isn't your strength. You're not a radio broadcaster. You told me walking in you were a little nervous. You're doing great. And I'm sorry you had to go through this. I'm going to pause. When we come back, just answer a couple last questions. And they include this. What has Vikings done for you since? And what are you thinking about doing as a result? We'll pick it up here in a minute on WGN. Somebody called and asked Roe, our producer, today, hey, what happened to the Jefferson Show tickets? They just went on sale yesterday. I didn't mention it. I will now. More details a little later on. And thank you to our friends at the Joint Relief Institute for sponsoring Thomas Jefferson's visit in Downers Grove to the classic, I don't remember exactly. It's the Tivoli
Theater. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a new thing they call it now. It's like the Classic Cinema's Tivoli Theater or something like that. But it's the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, May 18th, Saturday, 10 a.m. Tickets just went on sale yesterday. Here's how you get them. Go to WGNradio.com/Jefferson. The wait's over. Today, the Cubs open their season against Texas. Pregame next year is here, 2:30, first pitch at 3 on WGN-TV. On WGN Radio, our pregame coverage of White Sox baseball starts at 2:40. Ed and DJ with the first pitch at 3:15. The Sterigenics plant in Willowbrook was recently shut down by the Illinois EPA. That order came following mounting evidence that the area surrounding the facility has some of the highest cancer rates in the country. According to reports, Sterigenics has been emitting extremely high levels of ethylene oxide gas for decades, a chemical that's been shown to significantly increase the risk of cancer. There are news reports that assert Sterigenics has known about this threat that their facility posed to 20,000 people for years. They allegedly tried to cover it up by running secret sites, dumping chemicals. The testing has found in that area that they now have the highest cancer-causing, the highest levels of this cancer-causing gas to date. If you live or work near the Sterigenics facility in Willowbrook, you're urged to call the personal injury lawyers at GWC. Call 312-999-9999. That's their number, 312, then dial 9, or visit justicestartstoday.com. Speaking of justice, Kim Fox will join us, the Cook County State's Attorney, at 1:35. On social media, I'm WGN King John. So on Twitter and Facebook, it's not on my Insta page, I've asked you to tell me what questions you would have us ask Kim Fox at 1:35. It's 1:25, and Marianne Haley is in our studio, the Park Ridge resident who was on that Viking Sky cruise ship. She was there to see the Northern Lights. Instead, we all saw her and that ship that was listing above the Arctic Circle in Norway. Okay, so you've been telling us about that. So I guess the awfulness of it, the video that we saw, lasted about 24 hours from the moment the first engine failed to when they got the engines running again. There was about 24 bad hours, right?
Correct.
What is Viking doing to you?
Well, the chairman of Viking, Torsten Hagen, came onto the ship when we docked in Molde, and he met with the passengers who were still on the ship, and he had all the crew with him in the theater, and he thanked the crew, and he told the passengers that we would be getting a full reimbursement of our trip cost, and also, as he said, we would be getting a free cruise on his dime. So he was...
How was that received?
It was received very well. At the time, I think it hadn't really registered with people what we had been through, and we hadn't seen the pictures of what was actually happening. So...
You might not have seen the video that we were seeing.
No, we didn't see any of that.
And when you saw that, what did you think?
That made me realize how terrifying it truly was.
Because you were in a corridor, you were in a room, you were in a muster station. I almost had a better perspective on it than you did.
You actually did. We had no windows.
So you've got another cruise for free if you want one.
Correct.
Are you going to take it?
If it's a river cruise, we will certainly take it. The first 10 days of this cruise were absolutely fabulous.
Yeah,
but
they always are. I mean, those are wonderful things. And I'm just, you know, it's like any tragedy that happens. It happens to that person, but mostly it doesn't happen to anybody. And you won the loser lottery there in terms of cruise ships. This trip's free. The next trip's free. Anything else they're going to do for you? That seems sufficient.
We haven't heard any more from them, but I'm sure they said they would be in touch with every passenger.
Have you heard of any suits against Viking?
Not yet, but there were some people who were seriously injured, and I'm sure there will be, lawsuits because of that.
As maybe they should. What about you? What are your thoughts along those lines?
Well, they did the best they could. I guess the question that seems to be true issue is, should the ship have sailed that day? Many cruise ships in the area, ferries, all canceled that day, and we sailed on. There was a cargo ship right behind us that also floundered, and that would be the question that Norwegians are investigating now.
Welcome back, Marianne. My best to you and your husband. Your son, Will, is there. What a nice young man. He's got a smile on his face. He's here for his mom. And we're glad that you made it back safely.
Thank you so much.
It's nice to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. It's 1:28. Okay, so we've got WGN Radio News coming up in, let's say, 30 seconds. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. This is John Williams at 1:36 on WGN Radio. Kim Fox, the Cook County State's Attorney, is on a phone line. Kim, it's John. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm good, John. Good afternoon.
I know you've had a whirlwind of tours. You're trying to answer as many questions as possible, and we appreciate you making some time for us today. Since we've all been talking about and watching those interviews and listening to them, I have my own little set of questions in front of me.
Sure.
So while this might seem a little random, I hope you'll just kind of bear with me. The first question I have is, was this a plea agreement or did you drop charges? And is there a distinction? We visited with Jesse's attorney the other day, and he said this is no plea agreement. They didn't have a good enough case and dropped charges. Would you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, let me first do the caveat that I was not involved in the arrangement. I had recused myself back in February. So my first assistant, Joe Maggett, negotiated with Mr. Smollett's team the terms of the agreement. We had a strong case. To be clear, you know, not just in this case, but in other cases, any time that the state is asking someone to do something in condition of dismissing charges. They can only do that ethically if they believe that the case was strong. We can't ask an innocent person to forfeit their bond. You can't ask an innocent person to do community service. And so the semantics that apparently their attorneys are using is interesting. What I know, and having spoken to Joe, was that Mr. Smollett's case charges were dropped in exchange for his bond forfeiture and community service.
And talk to me a little bit about that community service. Who made that deal? When was it made? What are the very specifics of it? Can you talk about that?
John, I can't. Like I said, Joe Magatz, who was our first assistant, negotiated that. And so I know, you know, in broad strokes that he had done a couple days of community service here in Chicago and some other community service, I believe, back out west. But I can't tell you the specifics of that because, again, I was recused from the case.
You don't know the details of that?
I didn't inquire of the details of that. Again, I was recused.
But I'm sorry, Kim, but you haven't since? I mean, as we sit here now, you don't know the details of how that deal was worked out?
No.
I'm surprised by that. Aren't you curious?
No. I mean, I think part of the reason that I had done the recusal was to make sure that whatever happened in that case was done without the influence of me. And since the news has broken and the information of the last couple of days have gotten out, I've been more focused on how do we talk about how alternative prosecution and diversion work overall.
Okay, hold on.
And how people are able to participate in that. But no, I have not gotten into the weeds of how that was negotiated.
I'm going to ask maybe a question with a similar, you'll get a similar answer, but
sure.
Have you asked Joe why? I mean, it seems to me that typically when someone enters into this sort of a deal, they're prohibited from proclaiming their innocence when they leave. Why wasn't that part of this negotiated process?
I didn't ask Joe that, but I can tell you in broader strokes, again, there's the different ways that we do diversion. One way we do it is that someone pleads guilty and they are asked to do certain conditions. So maybe it's restitution or community service or some other type of engagement. Maybe if they have a drug issue, drug treatment, they're given time.
But I understand all that, but I'm just wondering why he's allowed to come out and badmouth you and your office when he entered into a deal for committing a crime.
I mean, that's a question that I can't answer for him. I think Joe looked at the various ways in which he could negotiate this, why he chose to allow him to do it this way. Again, he can't ask him to do something if he didn't think that he was guilty. And Mr. Smollett and his team obviously are trying to spin this in their client's best interest.
Have you asked Joe why he didn't get that part of the deal? And I only ask because, and I know you were recused, but this goes, I think, to the integrity of your office. So I would imagine you would be asking your first deputy why and how these decisions were made. I mean, you're the one who's got to be out here defending them now.
Yes, certainly. And I take no issue with that. What I was trying to explain earlier is there are circumstances where someone does not have to enter a guilty plea and can still do the conditions and have the case dropped. This is a class 4 felony, which is our lowest level felony, where those types of negotiations happen. So there are times where people have allocution where they say, I did it, and then do something, and we vacate the conviction and drop the charges. And there are other circumstances where they've done what is asked of them that's been negotiated, and we drop the charges.
You've used the term recuse a couple of times here, and I've heard you say you were speaking legally, but also at other times you were speaking colloquially. When you recused yourself, what did that mean?
So what that meant was that we put what we would call a wall around any information that was given to me. So we sent a memo from my chief ethics officer to anyone who was involved in the reviewing of the case, because, again, this was pre-charging back in February. So all of the assistants in felony review Joe Magatz, my first assistant, April Perry, my chief ethics officer, and I believe there are four or five other assistants who were on that. And in that email, it says that any information related to the investigation of Jussie Smollett would be cordoned off from me. They were not to talk to me or seek any decisions from me related to the case.
So you were in the dark. You were reading about this in the Tribune the way I was.
Yes.
And so does that mean, pardon me, Steve, I'll let you finish that thought, but I want to ask this, though. So you had no control over that. For instance, a lot of us are wondering why, if Smollett is essentially saying, okay, I did the crime, I'll do the community service, I'll forfeit my bond, but you'll drop the charges, why wasn't part of that agreement that he would also apologize to the police or the city of Chicago? I think that would have gone a long way for a lot of people.
I certainly understand that. Again, but to answer the first part of your question, I did not have any control over that. I exited this case on February, I believe it was 13th.
Were you surprised when the terms were revealed to all of us that he didn't have to even apologize?
I don't know about surprise. I've seen.
How about
these
disappointed?
Cases. I've seen other cases like this get the charges dropped, also in disorderlies where that's not necessarily a condition. And so I don't know if the word was surprise. It was, there were terms that...
Are you disappointed? Kim, are you disappointed? Do you wish that Jussie had apologized?
You know, I think Jussie knows what he did, and I think what his actions did to the city as a whole, I think would... An apology should be forthcoming. I would agree with that.
Steve Bertrand?
Well, I want to know what you're learning from your first deputy post decision. And so you said you were in the dark when the decision was made. So does that mean that you found out at the same time that Superintendent Johnson found out? I mean, they didn't.
No,
give
I found out just before.
They said that we've got this resolved and we're doing it in court.
Yes, I found out just before.
Tell me,
do you think it was a mistake not to at least give a heads? You know, because you got to know people were going. The heads were going to be.
Tell us, you yelled at him about this. Come on, I mean, so are you satisfied the fact that Superintendent Johnson seemed to be blindsided by this?
Listen, I've spoken to Superintendent Johnson a number of times since this decision was made, and certainly expressed to him that traditionally this is not the method in which our offices communicate with one another. But I also want to be clear, you know, Joe Magatz made the decision based on the facts and the law, and it doesn't behoove me to attack his decision making. What I can say is that, you know, we do have alternative prosecution and diversion in cases just like this. How he negotiated this particular case, I was not a part of. But part of this office's mandate is, in low-level offenses like this, to offer the possibility of diversion rather than going to court. And we've done that in cases exactly like this involving disorderly conduct.
Have you found other instances? How many times have you found instances where an agreement like this was reached, the charges are dropped?
We looked at the numbers, and we can give you additional numbers as we dig down deeper.
My understanding is it's just a couple, that you sent a memo out to your assistants, and we really don't have much evidence of that.
Let me first back it up. We were looking for specific instances like this case. But to go back for a moment, 48% of our Class 4 felonies with first-time offenders, 48% of those cases are dismissed. And those dismissals also include parts of diversion programs. What we were asking for, because people were asking, and I totally understand the curiosity and wanting to know how this happens, are for those specific cases in which the charges were dropped without an admission of guilt. And so the assistants on the ground, because those cases are already dropped and closed, would be in a better position to go back to their records.
I understand that.
To the file.
State Attorney Fox, can you explain for me, because I don't understand yet, what happened in court today, and is there not ever going to be an expungement? And it seems as if the judge in the case said that the records would maybe be sealed but never destroyed. Can you explain the proceedings today?
I was not in court today. My understanding in court today was that the court file was sealed, and that sealing was part of the statute that allows for the court file to be sealed. We don't have the authority to unseal the file.
Well, not the criminal record, but you can't ask for the case file to be unsealed?
According to Chief Judge Martin, we cannot ask for the file to be unsealed.
You have no leverage here? You have no tool to unseal that?
According to Judge Martin, we do not have the ability to ask for that to be unsealed.
The mayor was on our radio station today with Steve Cochran. Ro, let's play what the mayor said he wants to happen on WGN.
First,
yeah,
the police are right now finalizing the cost that was used of police resources to come to the understanding that, in fact, this was a hoax and not a real hate
crime.
Total
taxpayer dollars.
What we spent.
They want to know what we spent, and then they want Jussie Smollett to pay that. What is your thought about that?
I think that's a reasonable request. I mean, the $10,000 that he forfeited in exchange for the charges being dropped was the maximum allowable that we were able to get, but it does not absolve him of any responsibility to the city.
So does the city have civil recourse? Can they sue Jussie for the costs?
I believe that their corporation counsel could answer that better, but it's my understanding that they could.
Here again, so you said you recused yourself, so now we got to find Joe McGatt and ask him these questions. But it would seem to me like an apology and better compensation for the city's costs would be in order here. You understand that people are frustrated by that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do understand that, but compensation for the city's costs would, again, the statute that we were operating under for disorderly conduct, the maximum for restitution is $10,000. So even here in Cook County, I could not, if that were part of it, negotiate something outside of the statute. And so certainly Joe can explain that to you, but the maximum would have been $10,000, which, again, would not absolve the city at all of being able to recoup their costs for Mr. Smollett.
I want to ask you a couple of questions about the future. You know, the police are angry with you, and the Fraternal Order of Police will be protesting against you, the state's attorney, coming up on Monday. Your institution and the police department have to work together. I just wonder what you make of being protested against by police officers.
You know, we are an independent agency that works with Chicago Police. Again, we have a healthy respect for the work that they do and that they've done, not just on this case, but others. And so, you know, the choices that the Fraternal Order of Police make in terms of their membership, I have no control over. What I will say is that there's been a lot of focus on this one Class 4 felony, but every single day our assistants are working with Chicago Police dealing with some of the most heinous violence in this city. And I think we need to be reminded that as we talk about this one case, that we have a homicide rate that we need to get under control, that we have violence and gun violence in our streets that we need to work on. And certainly it is our belief that the Chicago Police Department share our concern about dealing with the violence in this city, and that certainly one Class 4 felony that was disposed of, like 48% of the other Class 4 felonies, would not preclude them from being able to do their job.
You had the dubious distinction now of making the president's Twitter feed. And are you concerned at all about what an FBI or Justice Department review of your office and your handling of this case might reveal?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Do you welcome that?
I have no reason to believe that there was anything that was done inappropriately here. I want to be very clear. Everything that we did in this case, from the moment that I talked to the victim's family, when he was deemed a victim, the moment that it became clear, and I do it all the time, I talk to victims and their families all the time. The moment that it became clear that this investigation was shifting, I made steps by creating a wall with our first ever chief ethics officer, who came to us directly from the U.S. Attorney's Office to ensure that the integrity of this investigation would remain solid. I stand behind that. I also stand behind Joe McGatt and his decision decision on how to resolve this case. We resolve thousands of cases every year, and the men and women of this office deserve to have their work acknowledged. And if this one case is going to be the lens by which we judge the work of this office, I find that unfortunate.
I think it's the lens by which people will judge your office.
Well, we should say, too, that Joe Magetz is a long-time prosecutor, right? This wasn't a rookie situation, right?
29 years. I'm his fifth state's attorney.
Okay, but
this is a veteran prosecutor.
No, nobody's arguing that. Kim, I don't think the problem is with him, and I don't think, although it may be, but I don't think it's the problem with the people that do the day-to-day work over there. But to be clear then, you're telling us that you had no directive to Joe to settle. You had no directive on the terms of this.
I could not. I want to be clear. I recused myself on February 13th.
And had no oversight and no more knowledge than anybody else listening to the radio.
No, and I think what's important is it's either you recuse yourself or you don't. And when I made the recusal, it wasn't under the public eye. I think people found out about it a week later, I think February 20th, but I had done it February 13th. Before there was any persons of interest that they had in custody, before any interrogations had happened, before the bulk of that investigation had been completed, I had recused myself.
Well, when those family members reached out to you, the case was already a little fishy to a lot of people. I almost wish maybe you do now, too, that while Jussie was the victim here, quote unquote, maybe Jussie wasn't. And perhaps it would have been a good idea not to take that call, not to open up or agree to any communication with somebody representing his family.
What I would tell you is to go back to February 1st, which is when I took that call. Superintendent Johnson on February 1st was on WLS TV talking about this case. And Superintendent Johnson that morning said, Jussie Smollett is a victim. And at this time, I have no reason to believe that he is not being genuine.
I understand that. That's sure. Sure he said that.
Oh, yeah, he did. He did that.
Okay. I have a question about the clerk's system. If I typed in now to search the records, at least earlier today, it comes up empty. No records, no results. Has that changed? Will that change?
I don't know because I haven't seen the clerk system.
Okay. Well, you understand why I'm asking that. People are wondering what access they can actually have to a file or a case.
Yeah, that's a question for the clerk's office. I don't know the answer to that.
This came up also earlier in the Mincing Rascals podcast, but were you surprised by the outcry?
People keep asking me that. I don't really know the answer to it. I am surprised to the extent that it has gotten as big as it has. We had a case a couple weeks ago where a woman falsely accused a black man in Grant Park of stabbing her in the stomach. And I know she's not famous. I know it didn't get the type of attention, but we've seen things like this before. The media's attention on this case was a surprise. But I think people who don't get to see, like I do, the inside baseball, you know, this being a class four feels bigger. But again, I'm in the work.
I'm glad you brought that up, because what happened to that woman? Was she charged?
Not yet.
So she made a false police report, as Smollett did, but she hasn't been charged yet.
Yeah, but a dozen cops, there weren't a dozen investigators working on that case for 3 weeks. There weren't 50-plus police or surveillance videos looked at. So I think these are apples and oranges when we talk about other class fours.
I would disagree with you, and I would disagree in that I think every case, and I think Superintendent Johnson said that, you know, every case is significant, and the police resources that are expended, whether it's a disorderly conduct or whether it's a shooting, it has a cost to all of us. And so when we start weighing, you know, which class four is heavier than the other, how many resources were spent on one case versus another, that's not how our justice system functions. And so I think in this case, the difference isn't the expenditure of resources. I think the difference is the attention that this case got. And it was a national case. case. And so I think because it was a national case, because so many people were watching, and because this was a glimpse into our justice system and a piece of it that we don't often see, which is negotiations before a trial, and to your point, a disappointment that people didn't see Mr. Smollett accept guilt for his actions that have gotten this to be a lot of the attention.
And there you were recused and unable to steer any of that. When you discovered what those terms were you disappointed in the decisions that your first lieutenant made?
I support my first assistant, a 29-year veteran of this office, and his experience in having made that decision.
Kim, I have one last question for you. What do you think happened that night, January 29th at 2 a.m. near the Subway sandwich shop?
I'm not in a position to speculate as to what happens. If I were in a courtroom, there'd be an objection calling for speculation. So the lawyer in me cannot speculate as to what happened that night.
That breaks with most other law enforcement officials in the city, though, right? I mean, the police superintendent says he did it. The mayor certainly says he did it.
The brother's attorney said they did it.
Your first deputy says he did it.
You asked me what happened that night, and when what did it means? I can't tell you what that means, and I'm not in a position to speculate about that. Gentlemen, I understand the concern of the people as to what happened in this case. I do, and the recusal that I made on February 13th, based on the information that was brought before me, required that I not engage in this case beyond that point. And again, I believe the recusal was done at my request. No one asked me to. I did not want to jeopardize the integrity of the investigation. And that means all the way through, not to second-guess the choices that I was not privileged or had privy to make, and not to undermine the work of a 29-year veteran who made that call. And I'll take the heat. You're absolutely right. This is my office. Joe works for me. I will accept that. But I'm not going to be in a position of second-guessing someone who made a decision based on the facts and the evidence that was presented before him.
Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. Any last comments for the city today, Kim? I sure appreciate your time. These were some of the questions we had. Any last thing you want to say that maybe we didn't ask about?
No, I thank you for your time. I think it's really important that we talk about alternative prosecution. I think, you know, one of the things that this has taught me is that a lot of people in our city don't realize that outside of the traditional court process, we have a very robust diversion program that needs more attention so people can understand what's possible. And then lastly, you know, I am committed to the safety of this city. Public safety is our primary goal. And again, it is important for me to support the work of the people who do this work in the office and our law enforcement partners on the street. This is one case of the 40,000 cases we'll have this year, and I'm confident in the ability of both the police and the Cook County State's Attorney's Office to keep our community safe.
Kim Fox, thank you for your time. Steve?
I was just going to say thank you, Kim, for taking the questions, because we weren't always very polite, and I appreciate your answers.
I'm okay. I have four teenagers at home. No one's ever polite. I appreciate it, gentlemen.
That's Kim Fox. So I guess our next conversation has to be with Joe McGapp. It's 2 o'clock. Okay, so it just turned 2. You heard the beep. Steve, I got to play a couple commercials. We'll start the news a little late. This is WGN. Shoot, Steve, I normally hear the open to the show.
There it is.
Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, but in a studio I don't normally use. Can you tell? We're in Studio A. This is the big one. This is where Ro Khan, Steve Cochran, Anna DeVlantis, those big fish play. Bill and Wendy, too. Actually, now that I think about it, I'm the only one that doesn't use this studio. Should that tell me something?
I don't use it either.
We're in Studio A.
Grisambo doesn't use it. Grisanich.
Grisambo.
I shouldn't have said that on the air.
That's a nickname
for
him.
No, it's my pet name
for this. Oh, I'm going to use that.
No, don't.
Hey, that's the world, man. What's the saying that you came up with earlier? I'll say the world.
Look at that. It's just getting so much chatter. I'm just so proud of the way it's sweeping across the 18th floor of the building.
Speaking of that which is getting so much chatter, I'm looking at CNN, and the scroll is Smollett's team, colon. It is the police chief and mayor of Chicago who should apologize to Jesse. Let's not go there. Let's not all lose it over who owes who an apology now. Folks have pretty much made up their mind about what happened that night. Everybody seems to have a pretty informed opinion except Kim Fox, or at least one that they're willing to share, and she is not. She was on with us just before the news here at WGN Radio. The Cook County State's Attorney answered a rash of questions from us. We appreciate her coming on, but it wasn't entirely satisfying in that she said her recusal was so ironclad and complete that she was finding out no more about what was going on in her office in that investigation than you and I were, listening to Steve Cochran in the morning or reading the Chicago Tribune. And so those decisions about should Jussie also apologize if this is a tacit admission of guilt or pay more, she says statutorily she couldn't ask for more, but that wasn't her call anyway. So much as an apology from him we did not get, and she said that was a decision that she didn't make, that Joe McGatt did, her first assistant, and she said she supports his decision-making process. I don't know if she was parsing words there. That is, yes, he's my guy. He's committed to justice, and he made a decision, and therefore I support him as a person in that position. I don't agree with every decision he makes. She didn't split that hair. She said she supports McGatt on what he decided. Fair enough. So now Smollett says, no, you guys owe me an apology. I'm sure Rahm's going to run to CNN and answer that one. So that was just a little bit frustrating. And now, I said, well, then the next interview we need to do is with the first assistant. And I don't know that we do. At some point, this is just going to recede. Maybe the city will, by the way, if you didn't hear the interview, maybe the city will recoup some of its costs. It's not going to change the world other than we'll be able to say at least we got a pound of flesh out of them. Maybe they will recoup some costs. And she said that she thinks an apology is a good idea. And she also thinks that it's not such a bad idea for the corporate counsel. It's not the state's attorney's job. If the city's going to sue, it won't be Fox that does it. It would be the corporate counsel for the city. She doesn't think it's a bad idea for the city to sue for the costs of the investigation. So there you are. You can comment on it. We posted about it on my Facebook page on social media, WGN King John. There was an interesting story in the Chicago Tribune the other day, and that was about young people who are trying to buy homes. Incidentally, it's 2:17 on WGN. We're about 25 minutes away from pregame coverage of real-life White Sox baseball. Yeah, 2:40. As you listen to me now on WGN Radio, you'll hear Ed and DJ and Andy Mazur and the gang with pregame coverage, and then 3:15, the first pitch from Kansas City. Remember now, if you want to continue to listen to this show and then Ro and Anna, make sure you know how to get to WGNradio.com and listen to us on the stream, because we'll continue the shows. If you want sunny White Sox baseball, it's been pleasant. Actually, it's been pleasant. It's been warm and sunny in Kansas City. The forecast for this afternoon was rain, but we'll go to them for the pregame coverage and hopefully a first pitch at 2:40. Keep listening to WGN if you want to listen to the shows. We're on the stream. And one last little programming note. At WGNradio.com/Jefferson, you can get tickets to our May 18th Saturday 10 a.m. show at the Tivoli Theater, as I talk to Thomas Jefferson and you do too on stage. Okay, so the Tribune had a story, and it was interesting. They said, well, you know, millennials are trying to figure out how to buy homes. And once upon a time, you used to have to come up with 20%. 20%. Now, we all know what happened in 2007 when you didn't have to have any percent. In fact, banks would loan you 105% of the cost of a house. Once upon a time, if you wanted to buy a $200,000 house, you could get a loan for $210,000. You'd have $10,000 to buy new furniture. That's how cuckoo bananas the world was. And then everything fell apart. And so then they said, okay, we're going to be a little more reasonable about this. I have questions about what's happening out there right now, like, how much should you have to come up with? Where should that money come from? From parents, family, friends? From the perceived equity of the home? Should you have to have saved 20%? We reached out to David Hochberg, who you hear a lot on this radio station. He buys commercials. He's also a pretty good guest. And he joins us now on WGN. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm great, John. And listen, I don't know if you're getting a good selling, but you got choppy in the past 10 minutes. Can you hear me all right?
Not very well, no. Where are you?
I can barely hear you, buddy. Let me call you right back.
Okay, that's David Hochberg. he may not be our guest coming up in just a couple of minutes.
The money he saves in offering low rates, he doesn't spend on a...
he's got one of those flip phones.
Right.
It's the, what's before I? It's the J, IJ, what, LMNOP? Anyway, he's got, I think he's out of state, and I thought he'd be on a landline or something better than that.
A lot of cell phones work in all the states.
All right, let's try it again. David, are you there?
I'm here. I apologize. That was great up until like 10 minutes before the... before, and now I got a strong signal again. So, yeah, I'm down in Florida for my daughter's birthday, so I apologize.
Happy birthday to her. I'm not sure this signal's a lot better, though, on my end, but let's give it a try. So,
okay,
David, how much do people traditionally put down now to buy a home?
Most people put down 3 to 5%, John. You could get into a house. I heard what you were saying. I read the article about the 20%, and, it's a cool way of thinking, but it's prohibiting a lot of...
It's gone. All right, here's what we're going to do. This fascinating conversation will be coming your way when David comes back from Florida and his daughter's birthday. David, thank you for making time. I'll be taking your questions now on how to finance a property. If you want to just call 312-981-7200. Steve has a question. Yes, Steve, what would you like to know about financing a home purchase? Okay, Steve doesn't have a question either. Back in a minute. Says here, you can make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10. Now, the story just moved on Fox News. Jussie Smollett's attorney demands apology from Mayor. Police Chief Jussie has paid enough. I said I wasn't going to do that anymore, so I'll put that one over there.
It's like the Mincing Rascals we recorded today.
You will hear the Mincing Rascals this evening if you want. And we said, okay, we're done talking Smollett.
And then?
We talked Smollett. Well, because then we started to talk about the mayor's race. Well, Kim Fox is tied to Tony Preckwinkle, so it went there. We started to talk about Donald Trump, as we often do. Well, Donald Trump happened to tweet about it as well. We started to talk about baseball, and it came up again. Actually, it didn't come up there. Our news click at WGNradio.com asks, how many games do you think? Hey, Kevin, did you do this? Did you take the news click at WGNradio.com? Here's the question today. How many games combined? Lapka will be good at this. In fact, I'm going to put Lauren on as probably getting the closest to this. We need to remember these scores now. Mm-hmm. How many combined wins will the Sox and Cubs get this year?
Oh, geez. Math on the radio gives me a headache, but I'll think here for a second.
That's what everybody said. Like, I asked him what the, you know, derivative of X is. It's the Cubs are probably going to win 92. The Sox are probably going to win 65.
Kevin is actually getting scratch paper out.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, somewhere between 165, 175.
Oh, you think that many? 160? Think about that. 165 means...
I'm feeling
hopeful
right now.
That's not, 165... 165.
I'll go 162. 90 for the Cubs, 72 for the Sox.
I think 162 is my guess, too.
You know, I'm surprised. 90 for the Cubs may be low, maybe high, and 72 for the White Sox sounds a little optimistic, Kevin.
Really?
Well, that's how I feel. Your numbers kind of line up with mine, but all the smart people I'm reading say the White Sox aren't going to be that good.
That's 20 games under 500,
well,
right?
Well, 72 isn't all that good.
They lost 100 last year.
Right. So you don't think they could have a 10-win improvement this year? I mean, that's maybe a stretch, but if they stay healthy and... Look, it's tough to say with the White Sox because they have all these young guys entering year two. Yeah. And year two is always the biggest question mark. Even if a guy had a good rookie year, it's like, well, normally there's that sophomore slump. And if a guy struggled his rookie year, like, well, maybe he makes big strides his second season. And they have a lot of those type of players this
Okay,
year.
Well, then maybe because the threshold... Most people on the news click said that the Cubs and Sox combined will be over 165. But
that would be...
That's maybe not asking too much.
That's
90 and 73. 93, 72 gets you there.
A lot of projections have the Cubs under 90 wins, finishing third in the division.
I'm looking at that.
Yeah, I hope someone is writing this down so that later we can all come back to what we said.
Okay, well, what's your number, Lauren?
Well, I said 165 to 175, but since I started at 165, if we're just picking a flat number, that's what I would go
with. Even though the news click ask gives you a range, I want your hard number. You're saying 165?
Yeah.
Lauren Lapka, Kevin Powell?
I'll go 162. 162, yeah.
Bertrand's going 162, but only because you're a copycat?
No, I said it in the Mincing Rascals, I think.
Well, you're 162.
You don't pay attention, but...
Did you say something on the Mincing Rascals? Okay. You can text your number right now to 312-981-7200, or you can just go to my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Or for that matter, the WGN radio page. We're asking you to, at least in a 10-point spread, tell us how you think they'll do. And White Sox baseball starts at 2:40. Our pregame coverage, it's 2:29, and the news is next.
Right. So you don't think they could have a 10-win improvement this year? I mean, that's maybe a stretch, but if they stay healthy and... Look, it's tough to say with the White Sox because they have all these young guys entering year two. Yeah. And year two is always the biggest question mark. Even if a guy had a good rookie year, it's like, well, normally there's that sophomore slump. And if a guy struggled his rookie year, like, well, maybe he makes big strides his second season. And they have a lot of those type of players.
Okay, well, then maybe because the threshold, the high, most people on the news click said that the Cubs and Sox combined will be over 165. But
that would be, yeah.
That's maybe not asking too much. That's,
I mean, if the, yeah.
That's 90 and 73. 93, 72 gets you there.
A lot of projections have the Cubs under 90 wins, finishing third in the division.
I'm looking at that.
Yeah, I hope someone is writing this down so that later we can all come back to what we
okay,
said.
Okay, well, what's your number, Lauren?
Well, I said 165 to 175, but since I started at 165, if we're just picking a flat number, that's what I would go.
Yeah, I want to. Even though the news click ask gives you a range, I want your hard number. You're saying 165?
Yeah.
Lauren Lapka, Kevin Powell?
I'll go 162.
162,
yeah.
Bertrand's going 162, but only because you're a copycat?
No, I said it in the Mincing Rascals, I think.
Well, you're 162.
You don't pay attention, but...
Did you say something on the Mincing Rascals? Okay. You can text your number right now to 312-981-7200, or you can just go to my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Or for that matter, the WGN radio page. We're asking you to, at least in a 10-point spread, tell us how you think they'll do. And White Sox baseball starts at 2:40. Our pregame coverage, it's 2:29, and the news is next. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio A. We are... Let's see, it's 3:57 or 2:37. It's 2:37. So White Sox baseball pregame coverage starts in 3 minutes. Remember, we'll continue to talk, visit, and do the shows, Ro and Anna at 3, all on the stream at WGNradio.com. So find out how to find that. We will still be here. By the way, I just checked the weather app, and it's drizzling in Kansas City right now. It's not too bad temperature-wise. Let me look at the temperature again. It's 57. It's raining there. There's an 80% chance of rain, they say, at 3 o'clock, which is right before first pitch. So maybe a delayed start if the forecast is right, because they say 4, 5, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 7:30, up to 8 o'clock in that window, it's supposed to subside. So raining now. Going to rain, then they get a break, and then the chance of rain comes back again later this evening. It's going to rain for sure tonight in Kansas City. But in between, early this evening, late this afternoon, they've got a window. So maybe the tarp is out. We'll find out in a few minutes. And if the game doesn't start on time, sounds like they will get the first game of the season in. Do you guys think that the Major League Baseball season starts too soon anyway?
Well, this is the earliest it started in years because they've worked in an extra days off for the players.
Yeah, right.
That's part of the agreement. So they kind of have to do it this way.
Couldn't they fix that with doubleheaders, though?
Sure, but you got to negotiate that with the players' union.
I wonder, and the players would rather this? Have the players agreed to it?
I don't know about necessarily start. Yeah, I mean, how else are you going to work an extra day's rest?
Well, and it's a lot of cash you're losing
exactly.
To the ballparks.
It's so much cash. I mean, ideally, I think it would be great to have doubleheaders on Saturdays, like once a month, or and then have Sundays off for teams. But like Steve said, it's a ton of lost revenue.
If you have fewer games, you guys are saying a doubleheader, they lose money on that too.
Yeah, well, folks go. Unless you're going to flush everyone out after the first game,
you are,
which they would.
Yeah,
and then teams hate that because then. You've got to stick around. For, you know, a lot of them.
It's a long day.
It's a very long day. But you know, if you can say, okay, well, if you guys do this, we'll give you Sunday off, right? But again,
I'm going to get Sunday off though, because that's a big attendance day, right?
Yeah, really, that's when a lot of folks can go. Not that they can afford.
Okay, a weekday situation then. Maybe like a Tuesday doubleheader. You get Wednesday and Thursday off.
That's when people can go if their rich friends invite them,
or if they got a guy.
Right.
By the way, so a friend of mine said, "Okay, here's what Vegas says: White Sox win 73, and the Cubs win 88. That comes to 161. Lauren is a little more optimistic. Kevin was at 162. Bertrand's at 162. 312-981-7200. Combined Cubs and White Sox wins. We'll continue to talk all about this, but we're now getting ready for White Sox baseball here on WGN Radio. Remember, at WGNRadio.com, WGNRadio.com, that's how you hear us on the stream. But now it's White Sox on WGN. Okay, so now I'm assuming that we are live on the stream and that broadcast continues on WGN Radio of White Sox baseball.
Do your Ed Farmer impersonation.
Yeah, I can't. I can't. I can't do a DJ either. Kevin, can you do an Ed Farmer?
Oh, no, I'm not even going to do that.
I was 3 years old. I was 6 foot tall. I was speaking French. And I was throwing 98 miles an hour. Something like that. I don't have the voice yet, but I do know the kinds of things that come out of his mouth.
You can ask Ro for the Farmer impression. He does.
Does he do a pretty good one?
He does a Ro version of it, yes.
Which is different.
I don't know if he wants to do it on the air, but looking for somebody with an impression, you can ask Ro.
They say, I don't do these things, but if you want to do somebody's voice, what you need to focus on is not the sound of the voice, but the content of their words, right? Like, what are the kinds of things that, you know, what's the attitude? And then people tend to do the voice as best you can, but people will sort of make the voice in their ears if you were at least giving them the content, the attitude. I was 6 foot tall when I was 3 years old, that kind of thing.
Or the cadence.
The cadence
right?
helps too, yeah. And then I also think it helps to know if there's if you're doing Bill Clinton, you need to say, I did not have. And if you're doing Barack Obama, it's always, now look. Because he would always precede, you know, what he was going to say with, now look, here's the way it's going to be. We're going to take your doctor, and you can call your doctor. That's not a very good Barack Obama, but if I think you get the now look, and then you say the things with a quick pause, that's Barack Obama.
It's kind of funny you chose the two most infamous sayings from those two presidents.
Yeah, I know that. Ronald Reagan was whale. I mean, it was just one word. Whale, there you go again. And then Ronald Reagan would talk like this. And it was warm and friendly, even as he was putting a knife into your back. Who else do you need there? You need George. If you did, what are the Bush, the two Bush men's signet? If you're going
to. Not going to do it.
Sure.
I feel like with W. Bush, it was the laugh.
Right. And again, that's what John's saying. It really was just moving your shoulders like you were laughing.
Once you get that going, then you can kind of say or do whatever you want. Okay, so the Vegas line. Okay, I just want to pull this up here real quick since we were talking about White Sox and Cubs baseball. Raining in Kansas City right now. Okay, so here's the line from Vegas. The Cardinals win 88. The Cubs win, this is the over-under, right? The Cubs are 87.5, so Cardinals first place, Cubs just back at 87.5. Brewers at 87, so those three bunched up in the over-under. Then the Reds 79 and the Pirates win 78. So Vegas has the Pirates in the back of the NL Central, finishing 10 back from the Cardinals with the Cubs a half game out. The White Sox division, you've got the Indians at 91, the Twins at 84.5, the White Sox at 73, the Royals at 69, the Tigers at 68. So White Sox has, Kevin, the White Sox winning 73 and finishing in the middle of the division.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, that's progress.
It is progress. I mean, you got to look for, you know,
I'll take that.
Bump in wins. I think that's one thing the Sox really have going for them this year. I shouldn't say that's the one thing, but that this is one component of projecting where they're going to end up this season is that they play in the weakest division in baseball. Cleveland is good. Minnesota could surprise, but it is not a loaded division. So you're not going to be playing the toughest competition all season long. I mean, I think Sox are definitely going to be better than Kansas City and Detroit. That's for sure.
So I'm looking at the USA Today. They've got seven writers, Bob Nightingale and the rest of them. They said, okay, who do you think is going to win the division? And the American League Central, six of them say it's the Indians, and one of them says it's the Twins.
Yeah, Twins could surprise. But I still think Cleveland, if Cleveland stays healthy, with the amount of talent they have on their team, they can just walk away with this division just like they did last year.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to face much competition.
And it looks like, again, I'm looking at the USA Today's seven writers, and they say the NL Central is close. The Cardinals and the Cubs. Three of them say the Cubs win it. Three of them say the Cardinals win it. And one of them says the Brewers win it. But if the Brewers are the same team they were last year, I guess you can't count them out. Or maybe if the Cubs are the same team they were last year, you can't count the Brewers out. What happened to the Cubs and the Brewers last year? Refresh my memory. What happened with the Cubs and the Brewers late last year?
The Cubs entered the weekend, the final weekend of baseball in first place, and then when the weekend was over, the Brewers were NL Central champions.
But didn't they go on a tear the last
Yeah,
like,
they won their
weeks?
Last 8 games of the season, I want to say. Last 7, 8 games.
We were probably 500 or something like that.
That sounds right, yeah. Cubs didn't finish all that strong, and Milwaukee... Took advantage of the opportunity.
So then, but then we had a one game. The Northsiders.
Yeah,
they had a one game.
Yeah, against the Rockies, and they lost in extra innings. So you know, I think a lot of people aren't completely. Some people will say the Cubs starting rotation is the best in one of the best in the National League, but I think a lot of people also look at it and say, well, they don't have like the Max Scherzer type. They don't have the Jacob deGrom type, the guy that's going to be your stopper if you do go on a losing streak. There's obviously some question marks with Yu Darvish, who was a disappointment last year after signing a 6-year deal. John Lester's still very good. He's very consistent. Does he have the ace type stuff? Not necessarily. Kyle Hendricks, they have a lot of two and three type starters.
Right, right.
You know, rather than a Scherzer, DeGrom, Aaron Nola in the National League plays for the Phillies. So maybe there's some question marks there, maybe some question marks with the bullpen. And the offense was not that good last year. They struggled last year.
Yeah.
And
But remember last year, we'd go on a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 game tear where we were scoring and we were mm-hmm. winning. It was like, we're back! And then we would just stink it up again.
Yeah, there was definitely some inconsistencies when it came to the offense. I thought a big part of that was that, you know, a lot of these guys are still really young. I mean, Javi Baez, for as great as he was last year, and he finished second in NL voting, he goes on these streaks where he swings at pitches. You just can't believe a Major League Baseball player is swinging him.
Yeah.
And it makes you kind of scratch your head. Anthony Rizzo was not good for the first 2 months of the season. Chris Bryant missed about half the season with the left shoulder. Now, I think Chris Bryant bounces back big in a big way this year. He looked healthy. He was determined in spring.
Remember what he did
in spring training?
Well, what did he do his first at bat in spring training? KB.
Homer?
Homer.
Yeah.
First at bat.
I mean, yeah. I remember talking to him after they lost that Rockies wild card game, and he was probably the most upset about any guy we talked to because he knows, look, he was coming off an MVP year. It was rookie of the year, MVP, and then coming off kind of a disappointing season. So I think he's determined. I think Chris Bryant has a big year.
Would be nice to see Yu Darvish.
Darvish is another guy that can bounce back. I think both these guys could have some good years. Look, when Yu Darvish is pitching well and is fully healthy,
I've never seen that. By
the way. I know because he probably not with the Cubs, that's for sure. But when he is fully healthy, he's one of the more dominant pitchers in baseball. He can strike a ton of guys out.
What's he making? Do you know?
Well, he signed a 6-year, $126 million deal. Like, get more math.
I would give some of it back.
I wouldn't.
I would just feel so.
Hey, sorry about that. Here.
No, really. I've said this before, and it makes people crazy. And maybe I wouldn't, but if they gave me $20 million to pitch, and I didn't even pitch, or if they gave me $20 million and I pitched a little bit, and sometimes I pitched bad, but really, essentially, he didn't pitch last year, and he still got paid. I would feel bad about that. I don't know what I would do about that, but I've never heard the players express a little remorse for letting the team and the fans down.
I mean, he was hurt.
Yeah. Okay, say I pitched and didn't do well.
I mean, what if you pitched really, really well? Would you demand more money from the team immediately? Look what I've done the past month. I demand a pay increase. You know, it's just the way it works.
Yeah, all right. I'll stop that. By the way, MLB.com, I don't know if you follow Anthony Castrovince, but Castrovince, Castrovince, he said the Yankees will win the World Series.
It's a good bet. They added some relief arms. They added a starting pitcher in James Paxton. And
must be nice to have money.
Does baseball work that way more than other sports?
When it comes to money?
Yeah.
Well, there's no salary cap.
But they do have to share, don't they?
There's revenue share.
There's a tax.
Yeah.
There's a luxury
tax,
right?
There's a luxury tax you can't go over.
So if you...
Well, you can go over, but you
right, but then you have
premium.
To pay other teams some of the money.
Right.
Which is just bizarre. Okay, but But, I mean, just think about that, right? What if a radio station said, listen, we've got so much money, we're going to have to give some to the other radio stations?
Well, it's a competitive balance tax is what they call it. Basically, major markets are obviously going to have more money. So instead of every year having the major markets be good, it gives other teams opportunities to have a little bit more cash.
So do the Cubs give some money essentially to the Brewers?
Well, they're not over the luxury tax. The Cubs have been adamant about that the past couple of years, not going over it.
Oh, so if they spend too much, then they
get taxed, and then that tax gets spread out.
So are they a dime under? I mean, do teams pay attention to that then?
Yeah, I think this year the luxury tax is $206 million. They know, and it goes up every year.
I'll bet they do. $206 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny, though, because with some of these contracts, I mean, that's per year, but some of these guys that are making $300 million, and I can think of four of them now, those guys getting $30 million a year. You know, how many guys do you carry on your roster?
Well, you have a 40-man roster. You have your 25-man roster. That's your big league club. And then you have all your minor leaguers as well. But it's the 25-man that it goes to.
Yeah. Okay, so...
I should have been a pro baseball player. It was that or radio, John? And, radio seems fun. Who needs all that money and fame?
The news click at WGNradio.com. What will the combined wins of the Cubs and Sox be this season? Over 165 wins. 40% of you said that, and one of you is Lauren Lapka. 155 to 164 wins, 28%. 145 to 154, 20%. Under 145, that's silly, 11%. That means the Cubs are going to win about 75 games, and they're going to win more than that. You guys have the Cubs at around 91, 92, it looks like.
Yeah, for the White Sox playing in probably the weakest division, Cubs play in one of the best divisions. And this is what happens when you win. The target's on your back now, right? Look at the Cardinals were very aggressive. They went and got Paul Goldschmidt this offseason. The Brewers adding some arms in their bullpen, which was dominant last year. So, you know, the Brewers caught up to the Cubs. Cardinals are the ones kind of chasing everybody. And the Cardinals, for the past decade, were the team everybody was chasing in the NL Central.
Yeah, no kidding.
If not longer than that.
Oh, yeah. Really, when you think about the NL Central, that's the Cardinals. It's the Cardinals. And really, it's the Yankees or the Red Sox now. Mm-hmm. That's the way you think about the AL East, say. Okay, so just real quick then. Cardinals. So here's what Vegas says. Cardinals, Cubs, Brewers, Reds, Pirates. And the Cubs just a half a game out of the Cardinals. That's what the people with money say they'll take action on. And the AL Central, it's Indians, Twins, White Sox. But the White Sox, 18 games out of first, they win 73. The Indians win 91. So it's Indians, then Twins, then White Sox, then Royals, then Tigers. They've got the Tigers winning 68. Those are the over-under odds in Vegas. We'll pause here. It's 2:52. Thanks for finding us at WGNradio.com. Don't forget now at WGNradio.com/Jefferson, that's a brand new page we've put up. Go to WGNradio.com/Jefferson, and there, frequently asked questions, all the information you need, how to buy tickets and video of Thomas Jefferson and me on stage. TJ and I on stage at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. And it's sponsored by our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. So on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m., you stroll out there. Maybe you get some eggs on the way or have a sandwich afterwards. And I'll interview Thomas Jefferson in person on stage. You get to ask questions, too. It's the funniest, seriest, most fascinating thing you will see on stage. It's an unrehearsed conversation. So people last time said, well, what about impeachment? And he answered those questions. And they say, what about Sally Hemings? And he doesn't want to talk about that. Have you seen Hamilton yet, sir? He doesn't like that question at all. You get the idea? Go to WGNradio.com/Jefferson. The tickets just went on sale yesterday. And we're only doing one show this spring. Now, usually we do two, just one this time out at the Tivoli at 10 a.m. So it'll be a nice way to start your day. May 18th, it's a Saturday. Please do go there and please do be part of that. By the way, Kevin, I'm kind of shocked and disappointed that people aren't talking more about the DePaul basketball game last night. I was there at the DePaul campus. You know, they play at the Wintrust Arena over by McCormick Place, but they're in this College Invitational Basketball Tournament. It's for teams that didn't make the NCAA tournament and didn't make the NIT tournament. So then they have another tournament. And you have to pay a lot, like $50,000, to be in this tournament. And then you're in the tournament, and then you get to play other teams that have similarly said, we're not in the other two, but we still want to keep playing. And so the DePaul Blue Demons have won their first three games against the likes of Coastal Carolina and Longwood.
I've never seen somebody so excited about the CBI tournament other than John Williams.
I'm totally pumped for it. For one thing, I can walk home. I can walk to and from it because I don't live that far from DePaul.
Yeah.
And you get the tournament. Go Blue Demons. None of that.
They probably thought you were messing with them. Like, that can't be a real tournament.
That's why I was putting pictures up. I'm like, no, I'm in a gym.
Looks photoshopped.
It was funny, though, because I was trying to crop the photo so that you could. It looked like there were more people that were there than were there. Because I'll tell you what, that gym, that the practice gym they have there was not sold out.
It wasn't?
No.
Are you sure? That seems surprising.
Having been one of the people for the last two games, I went to the last two games in the tournament. I can assure you that they're at about, I'd say, 60, 65% sold out. Maybe 70%. But it's so funny because you're in a gym that looks and feels like a high school gym. You know, it's not seating all around. It's bleachers on either side. And everybody's got popcorn and a soda. And they only have six cheerleaders because I don't think they have room for all of them. And so it's just like you're just crammed in this little box. And people are going like this. Defense! They're doing the defense cheer, and they're stomping their hands like you did in high school. I thought, oh, this is almost adorable. My words. And they won! That Max Strus lit it up again, and this Paul Reed kid can really play. He's going to be in the NBA. Reed from DePaul. Mark my words. Mm-hmm. And they beat Coastal Carolina. They go on to take on somebody else.
Can feel the excitement.
Rokan is speaking of Mr. Excitement. Rokan has just strolled into the studio.
I take that as an insult, actually.
It was meant to hurt.
Yeah, because I've been a little outraged, and you know me, I don't really get outraged. Well, I get nutty, but I don't get angry about things, and I'm angry about things. And I'll be honest with you.
Oh boy, here we go.
I heard your discussion with Kim Fox, and
you should have called in.
I have lost my phone. I did not like her answers. I just didn't.
Well, what are you going to? I mean, so that's one of those things where you say, "Why is this?" And she's got an answer that's not satisfactory. And then your producer goes, "You could have just screamed at him like Ro does."
What did you find the least satisfactory?
Her comparison to the woman who stabbed herself. On the
I should have pressed her on that. I didn't know every detail about that. I was glad that we remembered that case and brought it up.
Yeah.
But this is a case where somebody said I was a victim of a crime. They weren't, and they let it go.
Right.
But in that case, I didn't know that woman was deemed to be mentally incompetent, and so they didn't pursue the case like you would against maybe a Jussie Smollett.
Right. They said there was a mental illness case there and all of that, and she acknowledged what she did. Okay. See, Jussie Smollett still has yet to have acknowledged what he
did. Absolutely. He has not admitted culpability.
Okay, so that to me is the least satisfying thing. When you say that, she said, I recused myself so thoroughly that I did not even know the terms of the deal. For instance, why didn't we get an apology? Just an apology. You could have written that in. They do sometimes, but they didn't because, well, she had no idea what the terms were.
They're trying to make it seem as if this is so standard and so procedural and done all the time. And then that memo leaked from her office saying, find me examples because, this happens all the time, right, everybody?
Right. And they wouldn't have to work so hard if it did. Now,
We pressed her on that, too. We said, okay, but then this is not one of those things that happen all the time. Sure, cases get dismissed because they're not worth the effort, but not most of them require a dozen cops working 3 weeks, reviewing 50 videos, tens of thousands of dollars are spent. This is not
It's not normal. Several news organizations have also gone back to try to find similar cases, as similar as they can, about filing false police reports, staging sort of fake crimes to see how they were handled, and this was absolutely not how they were handled. The time it took from beginning to end was 33 days for Jussie. That is absolutely not standard. The fact that he didn't plead guilty is absolutely not standard. The penalty he got, absolutely not standard. And certainly the sealing and the expungement part, we all know.
And all of that, she goes, well, I didn't do it. So now I got to go to her assistant and say, okay, what will
get Joe on the phone?
I know. I don't know if he appreciates that.
Get Don on the phone. Where are all the pictures I was supposed to sign? I blame one person only, and I don't. The recusal wasn't technically a recusal. There's a whole process for recusal. She didn't go through it. That's the first thing. Second, let me just say this:
mm-hmm.
to whom much is given, much is expected. right?
True.
And for Jussie Smollett, just going back to him for a second,
mm-hmm.
he's a celebrity. He has an outsized responsibility to do the right thing. And when celebrities or people in public power do the wrong thing, they should be handled with, they often are made examples of. Unless, you know, there's, and that's why I told his lawyer to tell him to just go into rehab. Mm-hmm. That's what they all do.
That would have been a good idea.
Isn't that a great idea?
I had something.
Say, I'm sorry. Say, I did it. I'm sorry. Go into rehab. Pay a fine and move on.
What's the kind of rehab he goes to?
Anything. Whatever.
Being a jerk rehab?
Just say substance abuse because it could be anything.
He didn't think that was a good idea, though, Jussie.
Evidently. All right. Yeah. Well, you guys are off on a good roll.
Thank you.
I wish you nothing but well. We hope the White Sox win, and that when the game is over and you guys go back to WGN Radio,
that won't be happening.
We'll have a win under our belt.
That won't be unless the rain takes them out in Kansas City.
Yeah, what's the status of that right now?
It's starting at 4:00. First pitch at 4:00.
Okay. Well, enjoy the stream, bro.
Thank you very much. I always do.
Wink,
we do. Oh, there's a lot of things that happen on the stream that don't happen on the radio. So
it gets wacky.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Stay close for that. Although CLTV, we still have to kind of behave ourselves.
Williams out.
All right, then kind of Devlantis in. This is WGN Everywhere. Kim Gordon's got the news.